Blog Talk Radio.
Dreaded sports talk.
Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
That's right, this is Dreaded Sports Talk, and welcome to another fun-filled week of sports, music, and mayhem. I am Evil Rob, and me and my good friend Ken from New Jersey will be taking you through the next hour or so, talking about all the happenings that have gone on in the NFL, maybe the NHL, maybe the NBA. Nah, we're not going to talk about no NBA shit. But even some a little bit BCS action. But first things first, why don't we bring Ken in? Ken, welcome to the show, my friend.
I'm trying to get up. I just T-bowed, so we'd have a good show tonight, and I can't get up.
Well, did you T-bow or did you snooky? Were you on one knee or two? Come on.
That's right. There's a difference.
Exactly.
I'm doing good tonight. Good weekend of football, and a better weekend coming up.
Oh,
did I mention that Drew Brees and Arian Foster had big games this week?
All right, we got to get the Drew Brees and Arian Foster count going here. The counter is right now at one, so we're going to keep track of this and see how many damn times you mentioned Drew Brees and Arian Foster. Now, we know you can't go on with Brees Jones-Drew because he's not in the playoffs, so he's not doing anything.
I'll have Wes Welker next week.
Oh, that's right. Oh, now we're going to have three next week. Great. But that is if Houston and New Orleans and New England all win. If not,
yeah.
You know, there's a caveat to that right there, because if they lose, you really can't say how great they are anymore.
Well, they were great enough during the regular season. That's all I care about.
Yeah, they got to the fantasy championship.
Yeah.
Am I mistaken there or no?
No, I think that was a rumor going around.
Yeah, I saw that somewhere. I think maybe MSNBC had that posted. But why don't you start it off tonight, Ken? Just what's on your mind?
All this Tebow stuff, it's driving me crazy. This is a guy I'd like to go to Atlantic City with because he's as lucky as you can possibly get. Now, it appears he's not a bad guy. He's genuinely a nice person. But it's just, you know, you can't constantly be thanking God for everything. Now, I've had people on Facebook say, well, would you rather have him kneel down and do that, or some of the things these thugs do in the end zone, which, you know, I don't agree with either. I'm a big Giant fan. I think it's ridiculous that they put on this music and Victor Cruz does this salsa dance in the end zone every time he scores. It's an end zone, not a New York City club, you know. But the Tebow stuff is just, and I admit he's winning, but he's got to admit he's also getting lucky too. You know, I saw his post game little 5-minute press conference he did. I was watching it on ESPN, and he thanked God like 4 times in the 5 minutes that he was on, you know, for everything, for the touchdown, for being there, that his coffee was hot, everything.
Thank God the coffee maker worked.
It's like his little shtick now that he's got to do it. I follow college football pretty good, and I don't remember him ever doing this when he played for the Gators. I think he did it. It drew attention, and now it's like his little trademark, pretty much.
Well, he's always been a religious fanatic. I mean, when he was back at University of Florida, he was actually talking about not even going to the NFL draft, but going overseas to do, I can't even think of the name now, but like charity work in British Guiana or Guam or some third world country instead of going to the NFL. And everyone at that point thought he was absolutely crazy. But that was his religious calling, so to speak, and that was a big deal. And I was even watching something on YouTube earlier. They had a press conference back in the days when he was in Florida, and one of the newscasters, sportscasters, actually came out in a press conference and asked him if he was saving himself for marriage. And Tebow answered yes. So that just tells you right there what this guy's all about.
And I've seen some of those Gator cheerleaders on the TV. He's really...
Yeah, if you can
hold
off...
He might be the next Pope.
Pope John Tebow?
Pope-bo.
Oh, my God. That will be the epitome of everything if a Pope actually takes a Tebow name. Because you know how the Popes take... They don't sit there and whatever name that they take as the Pope is just a fictitious name that's usually used to honor somebody. Well, if they start honoring Tim Tebow, I swear to God, not only am I completely going to denounce the Catholic religion, but I might have to burn some churches down or something at that point in time. No, I won't go that far, but it is there. But, you know, I just look at things, and, you know, I agree with you on the Tebow thing, but at the same time, I look at it, and it just seems like yesterday, we were all sitting here talking about and arguing whether there would or wouldn't even be a football season this year. And we've gone through an entire regular season, a shortened preseason, entire regular season, and now 1 week of the playoffs. Playoffs? Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. But we're sitting here and we're looking at the final eight teams. We're looking at the divisional matchups. And who would have thought the things that would have happened this year is just absolutely incredible. Just the Tebow story, the head coaches getting fired, certain head coaches still staying with Norv Turner. And you just wonder what's going to happen next. Where is this season going? Because it seems like it's been the season of offense in the NFL. And defense has to step up. The old adage of offense wins games, defense wins championships was just taken to the next level last night in the BCS championship game. There was no question that defense just dominated that game. But when is defense going to step up in the playoffs? When you saw a game that had St. Louis. That's
yeah.
I'm thinking baseball right now. But, that had Detroit and New Orleans, who were two of the most high-powered offenses, the first time in NFL history you had two 5,000-yard quarterbacks going against each other. And the first half was all defense. And that was my upset pick of the week. I took Detroit, and yes, you could hear that Pucci yelping a mile away on that one in the second half, because Drew Brees, your Drew Brees, came out and just put on a show. That what he did in that game was absolutely incredible. What was it, seven drives, six touchdowns, and the only reason why he didn't score a touchdown in the last drive was because they took a knee on the 2-yard line with 6 seconds left. I mean, they would have punched that in without a problem, the two. It was absolutely an incredible game, and I mean, we'll get more into that in a little bit, but first we need to move on to what happened last night with Alabama and LSU. Did you see that coming, Ken?
No, I no way ever figured LSU getting shut out. They've had some slow first quarters and actually some slow first halves, but they usually come out and just turn it on. And I've seen them score 40 points and a half. That was just total domination.
Yeah, without a doubt, it was just complete and utter just defensive domination by Alabama. Now, I did pick Alabama to win the game, but I didn't think it would be a shutout. I didn't think it would be this low scoring. I figured it would be low scoring, but what it was, 21-0?
21-0, yeah.
That just absolutely boggled my mind. Now, the biggest thing, besides you know, the defensive prowess that Alabama showed. There's two questions that I have. One, did the quarterback, I forget his name off the top of my head right now, because he was just so out of the game, he was so meaningless during the game, did he really deserve to get the MVP? He had something like 260 yards passing and no touchdowns, where the field goal kicker ended up having
most of the points.
Yeah. You know, without that and without a last second, you know, fourth quarter sprint run by Richardson, it would have been a 0-0 game. Or did the MVP deserve to go to the defense, who completely shut out one of the best teams in college football? And everyone was talking about how great they could be. If they would have won the championship, they might have been the best team overall in college history. What do you think?
That's close. I have to really look at that. I mean, they play in a very tough conference, but this is the second time they played Alabama. I don't know. They're one of the better ones, I think, but they seem to be every year lately. I heard they had a really good recruiting class this year. They got like two top 50 rated quarterbacks. Actually, the one kid I think was like third. So they're going to keep building on what they have, but I definitely was surprised by the score. I still can't believe they got shut out.
Yeah, you got. So who do you think deserved the MVP? Was it the defense? Just a
yeah,
cluster,
I mean,
of defensive
I
players? Was it McCarron, the quarterback, or was it Shelley, the kicker?
I guess you can't give it to a whole defense. Although you should. They're the reason why they won. I would probably give it to the kicker.
Yeah, me too. Because the kicker is what put that game away. You know, what did he have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 field goals. Yes, granted, he missed a field goal and he missed the extra point on Richardson's touchdown. But that was meaningless at that point. That was just the nail in the coffin, that touchdown.
Yeah. Well, I kind of still would have liked to see two other teams. I kind of, in a way, don't think it was fair that LSU had to play them again. You know, they already beat them once. I don't think two teams in the same conference should, you know, play in the championship game. I think it should be. It's got to be spread out. That's almost like in baseball. You know, the Yankees playing the Red Sox in the World Series. I think it's got to be, if you're the division winner, that's what you are. You can't say, like, nobody can say, well, you know, Denver's in the playoffs, but they were only 8-8. I know they won their division, but you know, we're going to drop them out and put somebody else in it. You need some kind of consistency with college football. Something I don't like.
Well, the BCS is geared to put the two best teams into the championship game, regardless of conference, regardless of affiliation, regardless of, you know, whether they play scrubs or not. It's geared to put the two best teams together. And the only question is, were they the two best teams? It's not whether they're in the same conference, which, you know, I agree that they probably shouldn't have that, just because if a team beats you during a regular season and you beat them in the playoffs, now it's 1-1. Now, who's really the champion? You know, there's no one ear at the rubber match. So, but that's like that with any two teams, because they do play non-divisional games. Granted, the top 10 teams never play each other in non-divisionals because of the reason that if they lose, they'll be knocked out.
Yeah.
So you'll never see that. But did Oklahoma State deserve the chance? Were they that second-best team? Were they better than Alabama? And I have to say no, because I don't think Oklahoma State could have gone into this game and did what Alabama did by completely shutting down and embarrassing LSU. Because LSU looked like they didn't belong. It looked like they didn't belong to win the SEC championship. It didn't look like they belonged in the championship game. It didn't look like they belonged in a BCS game whatsoever at all. And I don't think Oklahoma State could have done that.
No, I don't. They can score, but I think their defense is a lot weaker. I think they probably were the two best teams. It just, I guess some years it's going to work out like that, but
Well, there is talk now. It just came out today that there is talk that they have, I think, 9 meetings in the next month and a half to 2 months. And they're talking about possibly doing a 4-team playoff, which is a great start.
Yeah.
Because a team like Oklahoma State would get a chance. And Stanford, I believe, was the 4th seed. So Oklahoma State and Stanford would have had a chance to show that they actually deserved to be in there. And when you got 4 teams the caliber of, you know, of Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma State, and Stanford, you never know who's going to win those games. I mean, last night proved that. And even the Oklahoma State-Stanford game proved that, because that went to overtime. So you never know who's going to win these big games. Excuse me. And that is why I think the BCS, college football, definitely needs a playoff system.
Yeah, we need to eliminate some of these bowl games. There's just too many bowl games. I think there was 32. And if you looked at the attendance on a lot of these games, places are empty. You're not bringing in people. Their argument is they're bringing football to a lot of different towns that don't normally get it. Like, look at that, the Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium. You had Rutgers, which is just about as close to local as you're going to get. They had, like, between 20 and 25,000 people. Because nobody cared. You got too many teams with – there were 4 bowl games that had teams playing each other that were 6-6. UCLA was in a bowl game. They were 6-7.
Yeah.
Just because you have a bowl game doesn't mean people are going to come. If the two teams stink, nobody cares.
Well, there's two things in that. One, to be bowl eligible, you need to win 6 games. That needs to change. Number two, all the bowls, like you said, there's way too many bowl games. Because you have teams that you got Bob U against Jimmy State, and you never know who cares about them. And they charge way too much for the tickets, and people aren't going to go and pay $85 for upper-level seats to go see teams that they don't even care about play just because they're in a local stadium. You know, because, okay, you pay $85 for your ticket, then you pay $18 for a hot dog and $22 for a beer.
Yeah.
You know, and you're seeing a game that you really don't care about. It's just a random, you know, Tidy Bowl game.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing to it, but which is why, you know, for years I've been saying, take the bowl games, take meaningless bowl games like the Pinstripe Bowl, and you make that a BCS playoff game. Instead of having your 5 BCS bowls, okay, the Pinstripe Bowl is now going to be your number 1 seed LSU against your number 4 seed Stanford. Now people will go to the Pinstripe Bowl. Because everyone wants to see those two teams play.
Yeah. There's nobody in all of New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut that really wanted to go see Iowa State. And even Rutgers, they're local, but they're not a powerhouse. They don't have a big following. They just recently started to actually win games, you know, and not be like a laughing stock. That was... You know what's funny? Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we were goofing on the bowl games, and I picked out we were talking about the big potato bowl or something.
Yeah,
something
the Idaho potato bowl.
Something like the great potato. I got to look at the name, but while we were talking, I remember I clicked on the link and I was making fun of the tickets. And I go, look, you could sit for like $40 a ticket in the Buckaroo section. They had all like these cowboy names for the sections of the stadiums. It was Utah State. I can't remember who else. They played that at Boise State's stadium. I remember making fun of it. And I'm watching the bowl games, and I'm looking, I go, wow, you know what? I made fun of this game. The place is full, and the game was actually one of the more entertaining, like, non-major bowl games as far as the, you know, the big teams playing. It actually was somewhat entertaining. I'm looking at that game, and I'm going, wow, I was making fun of this, and this is one of the few games that has people at it.
And you, one of the few games you actually probably watched.
Yeah. I would tune in and check some of them out, only because I was in a college bowl pool, which I didn't do so well in.
Yeah, me either. Yeah, I did not do well at all. My picks have just gone downhill this year. It's not pretty. But now here's another topic on the whole bowl situation. Everyone has been ripping for years the fact that there's been 2 weeks between the championship games and the Super Bowl in the NFL. Now, there's 40-something days between the end of the college season and the BCS games. Is that too long of a layoff? Are teams like LSU, if they played that game 2 weeks after the season was over, would this have been a different outcome? Do you think that LSU would have actually showed up and been able to figure it out, or were they just so out of whack that they couldn't do anything no matter what? Was Alabama that good?
Well, I mean, I guess each team had the same layoff. I do think the layoff is crazy, though. 40 days. That's also why you probably see a lot of these high scores in these bowl games, because the defenses are a little bit behind. They don't play for a month. You know, from like bowl week on ESPN, that's about a month since, you know, after the regular season ends. Defenses are out of whack. You know, it's... You should just pick it up and play. You don't need that month off. Just start. And if you have a playoff system, that's what you can use those smaller bowl games for. Use that time. I know it drags out the season, but you're dragging it out anyway.
Right. Yeah. And
there's just too many teams that just didn't deserve to be in a bowl game. I'm sorry. Like UCLA at 6-7 did not, you know, deserve to be in a bowl game.
You should not be able to be in a bowl game if you have a losing record, plain and simple. And I honestly think that they need to change the bowl eligibility requirements to 8 games, move it from 6 to 8 games. Because there's just too many teams that are eligible. And it's coming down to the point where you're picking teams that could possibly draw in certain areas. Like, Rutgers would not have made a bowl game if it wasn't for the Pinstripe Bowl.
Yeah, they weren't going anyplace else, yeah.
Right, you know, the Idaho Potato Bowl wouldn't even look at them.
Yeah.
You know, any other bowl game would not have looked at them because they're not a local area. The only reason why they were in that bowl is because they're the most local team that could possibly draw fans to the stadium.
Yeah.
And it still didn't work.
The famous Idaho Potato Bowl in Boise, Idaho. Ohio beat Utah State 24-23.
God. Now, what would you say was the best game? Now, I have a toss-up, in my opinion, of two. And one was obviously the BCS championship game, just because of how well defensively played it was, even on both sides. LSU did – their defense played phenomenal, and it was just for a few field goals that they ended up losing. But the other one that comes to mind is Michigan-Virginia Tech. Now, I was very adamant and said that neither Michigan nor Virginia Tech deserved a BCS game, and they both just got in because of money, because they had the draws. Well, they played a phenomenal game. You know, it came down to the last play of the regulation time. It came to a big stop by Michigan to force the tying field goal, went to overtime, and Michigan ended up pulling it out. Which game would you say was better, or do you have a third that should just be in that mix?
Well, there were a couple. There was the Baylor Washington game. That was 67-56. There wasn't like a second that went by in that game without action. There was Michigan State in the 3 overtimes over Georgia.
Well, that wasn't BCS, but
BCS. Probably the Michigan Virginia Tech with the overtime. The Oklahoma State Stanford game was another overtime. That was pretty close. That was back and forth. You know, a lot of big plays, big passing plays, a lot of offense. But again, like you said, look at these scores. Just in the top bowl games, you got West Virginia scoring 70, 41 for Oklahoma State, 45 for Oregon, 38 Michigan, 38 Stanford. Even losing, Clemson put up 33.
Yeah, it's been crazy. But let's see here. Where is everything? There we go. We're going to take a short little recess right now. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about that West Virginia-Clemson game, because that we just can't go without saying anything about that was just an incredible game to watch, especially if you're a West Virginia fan. But we'll take a little break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Thanks for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network.
Today, I'm going to the beach. It's a sunny day and I'm on my way and I love to feel the heat. See palm trees and coconuts, get the sand in my feet.
I just could not resist that one. I figured you'd get a kick out of a little St. Elmo's Fire remix right there that was done. You know, being that you mentioned Tebow right off the bat, I figured, you know, you'd get a kick out of that more than anybody.
That was good.
Tim Tebow's Fire, give me a break. But one thing that we have to get into before we go into the whole NFL scenarios is the West Virginia-Clemson game. Now, this is a game that set or tied 9 records for scoring. Let's see if I can find. Yes, here it is. All right. The records are as follows. Now, this is just incredible. Most touchdowns for a team with 10, West Virginia. That tied a record. Most combined points in a half, 69. Great number. That was the first half. Most points by a team, total, 70 by West Virginia, who beat the record set 3 days earlier by Baylor, which was 67. Most points in a quarter by a team, 35, West Virginia, in the first quarter. Most points in a half, West Virginia, 49, first half. Most touchdown passes by an individual, Geno Smith from West Virginia, had 6. Most touchdowns responsible for by an individual, Geno Smith had 7 because of the one rushing touchdown he had. Most points responsible for by an individual, Geno Smith again, had 42. And most receiving touchdowns by Tavon Austin, who had 4. And that also tied a record. So, what the hell happened to Clemson?
But it was a Clemson running back who was the leading rusher in the game. 10 carries for 116 yards and a touchdown. So they have something to hang their hat on. That's the building block for next year. I don't know what happened to them. 70 points. If you want to blame it on the layoff, on what? But that was embarrassing.
Yeah, and the sad thing is Clemson was actually leading after the first quarter. After the first quarter, they were up 17-14.
Yeah.
And then the whole game just fell apart for them. It's just the only thing that stopped who is it? Cook. What's his first name? It was a receiver for West Virginia. The only thing that stopped them was the West Virginia mascot. Because they ran into him. The guy ran into him and knocked him over in the end zone.
Yeah. They had a 99-yard fumble return. Not a lot of big plays other than that. A lot of 7-yard TD run, 3-yard pass, 1-yard run, a lot of just drives, you know, not a lot of like 50-yard touchdowns, 70-yard touchdowns.
No, not at all.
The fumble was a freak play, but it was 99 yards, but that was it. It was a lot of drives and, you know, moderate scoring plays, nothing really crazy.
Yeah, the longest play of the day, offensive play of the game, was by Clemson running back Ellington, who had a 68-yard run, and I believe that was a touchdown. It was like the first score of the game.
Yeah.
Other than that, the longest play from scrimmage was 37 yards. That's by Austin, the receiver that set the record for most touchdown catches in a game, or tied the record, I should say. 37 yards. That's absolutely astonishing because you see that in the NFL. You look at Drew Brees and you wouldn't expect him to not put up 70 points in a game. But he's throwing 50, 60-yard bombs to Meacham and whoever, Moore, and whoever is out there to catch the ball. It doesn't really matter. He could pick somebody out of the stands to catch the ball, and he'll still throw a 70-yard touchdown past him. But like you said, you would expect there to be big plays, and there wasn't. That 99-yard fumble return for a touchdown was by far the biggest play of the game.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible. I actually missed that game. I didn't see it, and I am kicking myself for not watching this because I don't know. To see offensive outburst like that. Now, don't get me wrong. I love defensive games. I was actually glued to the television set last night for the BCS championship game because of the defense. Because I just love seeing people shut down. I love seeing high-powered offenses not be able to do anything. And I was also one to criticize West Virginia to be in a BCS game. I didn't think they deserved it, and they proved, by far, that they deserved to be
in. I saw most of it. It started late. It was 8:30. When it got out of hand, I kind of started dozing off, and I eventually shut it off. But when I heard the final score in the morning, I'm like, oh, my God. I should have probably watched that a little bit longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Baylor game, you couldn't turn off. You couldn't even leave the room because if you walked out, I walked out for 2 minutes to go downstairs to get something, and I come back up, and I see it was Washington kicking off. I go, wait a minute, Baylor just scored. What the hell happened? You literally couldn't leave the room because there were very few defensive stops, very few punts, a couple turnovers, but it was just every play something was happening.
Exactly. And it was a phenomenal game to watch. And like you said, I was glued to the set for that one too, just because you're just in amazement of where the defense go. It was like they weren't even on the field.
Yeah. You didn't need a defensive coordinator after that. There should have been two vacancies after that game. One for each school.
Exactly. But let's move on to the NFL. And we'll start off with the game that I picked as my upset special and was wrong, the Saints and the Lions. Now, like I said before, the first half was a defensive battle. Drew Brees was held to basically nothing. The Lions' defense was playing incredible. The Saints' defense was playing incredible. Neither 5,000-yard quarterback could really do anything. The Lions were up, I think, 14-10 or something like that at the half. And then the floodgates opened up. What was the difference in the second half, Ken?
The Saints actually seemed a little bit tight in the first half. Brees, I didn't think he was as sharp as he usually is. He was kind of throwing some balls a little bit high. When he's on, he throws the ball. He leads it right to the receiver. You know, you don't have to reach back, try and catch it over your shoulder. He seemed a little bit off. It seemed like once they got into the half, I don't know what they said at halftime, but he came back out, and you just could see the passes were there, right at the receiver. They didn't have to reach back, stop, reach down. They could catch it in stride and get those yards after the catch. I'm a little surprised how the Saint defense has been playing. It's been a little bit better. During the regular season, I thought it was a little bit shaky. They had some games that gave up a lot of points. They actually made a couple good plays, and they have a tremendous running game. You could put any of three running backs in and get yardage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though Mark Ingram's hurt and out for the playoffs, you could still put him in and he'd still gain yards.
Just a stable of receivers. You got Colston, Lance Moore, who actually missed last week's game. Did I mention Lance Moore was on my fantasy team also? Meacham, Devery Henderson, Graham. That's a huge addition. You know, you got a tight end that catches so many balls like that. It's the year of the tight end between him and the two guys from the Patriots.
Yeah, Gronkowski and Hernandez. It's absolutely incredible. And not to mention Matt Stafford. For the first time all season, he had the Dante Culpepper look. He had that deer in headlights look in his face in the second half, because once Drew Brees started just pinpointing receivers, even though Stafford has thrown for 5,000 yards through, like, amazing touchdown passes to Calvin Johnson, every other receiver on that team all year long, had battles with Aaron Rodgers and everything else, it was his first playoff game. And you could see it in his eyes in the fourth quarter where he was just pressing.
Yeah.
And by pressing, he was throwing interceptions. And by throwing interceptions, he's giving the ball right back. And that was a huge mistake on his part. But, you know, he's a rookie playoff quarterback. And that's what happens to rookie playoff quarterbacks a lot of times when you get into shootouts. You need your defense to step up, and the defense that stepped up was the Saints. Now, the biggest key in my mind, and you just mentioned it, was the running game. The Lions could not run the ball.
Their leading rusher was Kevin Smith with 21 yards.
Yeah. If you get 21 yards in a game, if you get under 80 yards in a playoff game, you can't expect to win. I'm sorry. I was talking about this on another show on Saturday night, and right on this network, actually, the Southernmost NFL pregame show, I was co-hosting with the Zin Man, and I was saying that, you know, running is the key. If you don't run the ball, if you can't run the ball, you can't win a game. I don't care if you're in a shootout or not. And the Saints just ran all over the Lions.
They had three rushers with Thomas with 66, Broles 51, Ivory 47. And then you go through the receivers. You get Colston 120, Meacham 111, Henderson 64, 55 for Pierre Thomas. Actually, it's a slow game for Graham, 55 yards, but he did have seven catches for the 55. Yeah, even the fullback, Collins, had two catches for 20.
And that's a typical Saints offensive day. They spread the ball out. That's what scares everybody about the Saints. You can't cover everybody. It's impossible to cover everybody.
Because they can run. You can't focus on the pass, because if you do,
they'll run all over you.
Three guys, and when Ingram's healthy, they got four guys that can run all over you. And it's even hard to focus on a receiver. You figure, okay, Colston's number one. But then
right.
You got Graham. And then you got Lance Moore, who finished the season red hot. He had like six touchdowns in the last five weeks.
Yeah, then you got Meacham, everyone forgets about.
Devery Henderson doesn't get a lot of balls, and when he catches them, they're long. And this game was an example. He had two catches for 64 yards and a touchdown.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely...
Sproles can run, or he can catch. You don't know what to do. He can run. It'll set that little screen up with him. They let him drift out and to the left side, and Breeze just lofts it up over. Then you got the lineman in on the screen, and then he has all that open area. Once he gets that open area, he can cut on a dime. He could be anywhere.
Yeah, there's no such thing as throwing eight in the box against the Saints team. You can't do it, because if you do, three out of your four receivers are wide open, including Graham as a tight end. It's just impossible. It's almost impossible to stop them when they're at home. But you put a team like the Saints on the road, where they're built on speed, they're built on just going out and getting people, and they're a different team on the road. And that might hurt them this week in San Francisco. But we'll get into that later. Let's move on to the Houston-Cincinnati game. Now, once again, this was a game that was won based off of the run. Cincinnati could not run the ball, and Houston did because of...
Arian Foster, the greatest fantasy running back of this season, maybe of all time.
I figured I'd set you up with that one right off the bat, so...
24 carries, 153 yards, and two touchdowns. And he had that one. The one touchdown was phenomenal. He either broke or they just couldn't tackle. Got through two players, tightrope the sideline, and still got into the end zone.
Yeah, it was incredible. And you know, I'm a big Andy Dalton fan. I'm a big AJ Green fan. I think the two of them together are just gelling, and they are a force to be reckoned with if they can continue to grow together. Because how many times, I mean, first of all, it's hard for a receiver to get used to the NFL style, the NFL play, the NFL to reading the NFL defense to begin with. When you're dealing with a rookie quarterback, that adds to it, because you know what you're looking at, and you know what your quarterback looks at if you're dealing with an experienced veteran quarterback. But when you got a rookie quarterback, you don't know what reads he's seeing. You don't know if he's realizing that the corner is lining up inside or outside of you. Does he really see that, or doesn't he? Because in an option route, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, if he's lining up on the outside, it's a slant in. If he's lining up on the inside, it's a hook or a slant out. Or you're just going straight for the end zone and hoping to get a 60-70 yard play out of it. So you don't know what that rookie quarterback's doing. And for those two to come together like the way they did was incredible. But what's even more incredible is what a young man by the name of Yates has done in Houston. He came in to the season as a third-string quarterback, expecting to wear a baseball cap all season and holding a clipboard. And now he's starting not only in a wild card game, but now he's starting in a divisional playoff game. And he's been without some receivers. Houston's been hurt. But what did you see besides the running game, besides Arian Foster, obviously, because we know that you know, you think he has been a god and he's the reason they won. But what else was the key to Houston's victory, in your opinion?
The defense played well, kept the Bengals off the board as far as the rushing attack. I don't know if I missed something or what the reason was, but I know the second half seemed like Cedric Benson was on the sideline the whole second half. I didn't see anything that he was hurt. They kept showing him on the sideline, but they kept the running game down. They got the three picks off the quarterback. He had 159 yards, no turnovers. That was the key. No turnovers, no interceptions, and no fumbles on the Texans side. The Bengals didn't have any turnovers, but they got picked off three times, and that'll just kill drives. They had no answer for Foster. He was just ripping off big chunks of yards, and even his backup Ben Tate is not a bad running back. Who, if he was on maybe another team, would be a starter.
Right. And Foster got lucky because early in that game, he had two fumbles. Both were recovered. One was recovered by him, and another was covered by another offensive player.
Yeah,
I forget who it was. And that could have been huge game-changing plays right in the beginning, but he just got lucky bounces. The one fumble, he dropped the ball, and it literally, as he was falling forward, bounced right back into his hands. It was like it was meant to be. It was like Tim Tebow said, God, I want Houston to win this game.
Andre Johnson seems to be healthy again. He had 90 yards and a long touchdown. That's key because then they have to watch him. And then it leaves Walters or Owen Daniels had a big year. He didn't score a lot of touchdowns, but he had a lot of yards. And with Johnson back, that freed him up a lot.
Right.
He had two catches, but he was targeted a few times. Two he dropped, two were over his head. This is going to be a tough game for them this week with the rookie quarterback, but you never know. He's gotten this far, and if they can run a little bit and Foster can keep him in the game, might open up a big play to Johnson.
Because everyone double teams him, and that's just a thing that the Texans have to deal with. But now let's move on to my favorite game of the week. Ha-ha! The Giants and the Falcons. Ken, I'm going to let you start on this one because I have a boatload to say about this, so I'm going to let you get your stuff out first.
Actually, at first, I was a little bit worried because the Giants didn't come out and, you know, blow them away. That the Falcons actually moved the ball, got down inside Giant territory. They were stopped on a 4th-and-1. They got the safety. Then they were stopped on another 4th-and-1. And they ran the same play, the quarterback keep, which didn't work the first time. But it seemed like once the Giants got that touchdown from Hakeem Nicks, where he broke a couple tackles, should have been brought down, sprinted off at a 70-yard-plus touchdown, and that seemed to just take all the wind out of their sails. I wouldn't say folded up, but they seemed a little less enthused after that. I think that was the telling point. Plus the pass rush. Ryan was under pressure. Again, he didn't have a big game in the playoffs. He puts up good numbers during the season. He's 0-3 in the playoffs. And he's yet to throw for over 200 yards in any of the three playoff games he's been in.
Yeah, well, this was going into this game, I was very confident. Because the Giants were at home, and I know the Falcons are a horrible road team. Plus, I knew that, like you said, Matt Ryan has yet to win a playoff game. He's 0-3 now. The one thing that worried me was Eli Manning and the New York Giants have not won a home playoff game yet. Well, obviously that changed. Now, the first half was hit and miss. I was terrified in the first half. I was pooping biscuits, I will be honest with you. Especially when Atlanta got that safety and I saw how fired up that team got. And I'm looking at the game going, wait a minute, we're running the ball, why are we trying to pass here? And this came down to another game where the Giants could run the ball. And I'd never thought, the way this season has gone, I could say the Giants could run the ball. But they did. The Falcons and Michael Turner, who was one of the better fantasy running backs, or one of the better running backs in the league, couldn't do anything.
And, he had 41 yards was his day.
Yeah, 41 yards. You can't, once again, you can't win a game if your star running back is getting 41 or 21 or under 80 or 90 yards. You can't win. And the Giants ran for over 150 yards in this game combined between their three running backs. And it's, in my mind, what did it was, you could see a difference in the Atlanta sideline in late. I think it was late in the third or early in the fourth when they got the second, fourth, and one stop. You just saw the dejection on their faces at that point. And the ensuing drive, as soon as the Giants got that stop, what happened? It was the end of the third quarter, actually, that happened.
Yeah.
And the ensuing drive was a few plays and then the 30-something yard touchdown pass to Manningham. And right there, that's when you knew that game was over. You knew there was no coming back for the Falcons because they didn't even want to go back on the offense. Did not want to go back on the field. The defense didn't want to go back on the field. They just wanted that clock to run out and go back home.
Brandon Jacobs was running people over too. That's 2 weeks in a row. He's just been like the guy of old, the player of old. Those safeties coming up to make the tackle, just getting plowed over. Both weeks, Cowboys and Falcons, he's just been tearing people up lately.
Yeah, and that's what happens when Jacobs runs north and south. Once he starts sidestepping and trying to go outside and, you know, juking and jiving, he gets into trouble because his mass is not leaning forward. He's leaning to the side. And what's easier to do? Knock over 100 pounds or knock over 400 pounds when it's leaning or knock over 400 pounds when it's standing straight up?
Yeah.
And that's what it's like when he's coming at you full bore. It's like you're getting hit with a 400-pound brick.
He just buried some. Like I said, the last 2 weeks, I actually felt sorry for the defensive backs. Just trying to, they try and go low on him. He just like ran him over and just almost stepped on him and kept on going. Took a few guys to bring him down. He keeps running like that. You got the power. And he got Bradshaw taking the ball outside, and he also had a couple nice runs where he cut it back up inside.
Yeah.
He got both of those guys healthy again. Don't forget, Bradshaw was out a lot of this year.
Yeah, was out. Jacobs was out, too. And both Jacobs and Eli Manning had their longest runs of the season in this game. It's scary to think that Eli's, like, 16-yard run was the longest this season, and Jacobs' like, 32-yard run was the longest of the season for him. and well, we'll get more into what that is in a second, but I'm trying to find one little clip here. Oh, yeah, here we go. Before we get to the next game, I got one little thing we got to do.
This kid is a gamer. He's a baller. He's a playmaker and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got T-Bone. He shatters the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is win games.
Listen.
I got T-Bone. He shatters the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is unleash.
Tell him, T-Bone.
Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play. Let him play.
Next on Sunday.
Unleash.
Tell him, T-Bone. Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play.
I'm going to church Sunday.
Run past. option. I think that's my game.
I guarantee you that!
I'm no John Elway.
He's rewriting the book.
Week in and week out.
He's a unique football player.
That's what Tim Tebow's all about.
He's a gamer. He's a baller. Playmaker. Shot caller. He's a gamer. He's a baller. Playmaker. Shot caller. Unleash
Tim Tebow. Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play. Let him play.
Right. On Sunday.
And all he does is win. All he does is win.
One more day. One more win.
All he does is win game.
And that leads us into the Steelers and the Broncos. Now, I'm going to start this one off because I just think the Steelers made the biggest defensive blunders in this game. It looked great when the first couple drives when they were just rushing the hell out of Tebow, Polamalu, and I forget who the other safety was. They were just leaving all the receivers open and rushing them and making Tebow throw the ball. And he wasn't on his game right away in the first couple drives. He looked like the Tebow the last 3 weeks. And I said, oh, this is going to be a blowout. I turned the game off, turned it back on 10 minutes later, and it was like 17-6. The Broncos were up at the halftime. And I'm sitting here going, what the hell just happened? So I had to watch the second half. And the Steelers continued to do the same thing. Completely rush the passer, leave receivers open, and it turned out to be the worst possible thing they could have done. They did not do what they should have done, which is watch the game film from the Kansas City game and see how to shut this guy down. Now, it goes to overtime. And what happens? The first chance that we have at the new overtime rules, I'm all excited about it. I'm getting, yes, new overtime rules. We're going to get to see some fun. And then first play of the overtime, 11 seconds in, and what happens? An 80-yard touchdown pass. Who would have thought Tim Tebow would throw an 80-yard touchdown pass? Granted, he only threw the ball like 6 yards. But still, he threw an 80-yard touchdown pass to win the game in overtime. Why? Because the safeties pinched and rushed him. He dumped the ball off, and Thomas ran it and outran the two people that he had to outrun. Now, did Tebow deserve to win this game? Does he deserve the credit, being that he did throw for over 300 yards? He did have 2 touchdown passes. He didn't rush the ball. He did everything that everybody said that he couldn't do. But was it him, or was it the Steelers' defense that screwed up? What do you think, Ken?
I think the defense was hurting a little. They lost two linemen. They lost Hampton and the other guy's name. Two starting linemen and the safety that should have been there in that deep coverage on that touchdown play. Clark didn't even play because of that blood disorder.
Right, the sickle cell.
They played up for the run. They didn't run. The safety came. You can see on the replay came flying up. Left the field open. And he did have a chance to be brought down around the 40-yard line. It was a missed tackle. And then once he got past that guy, he was off to the races. But I think a combination of the injuries on the defense and the safety being out of position, you know, led to that play. There's no way they should have scored from that part of the field on the Steeler defense if they were healthy.
Yeah, and part of the reason why the safety was out of position was because, I believe his name is Murphy, was in the game, and Polamalu is pretty much a free-reign safety. He does what he wants to do. And unless you're used to playing with him on a daily basis, you don't know what he's going to do from time to time. You can actually, if you watch him, you can read it, but when you're on the field, it's a different story. And I don't think that this kid was ready to be in that situation when Polamalu just darted for the QB. He darted for Tebow. And they all got beat. It was plain and simple. And I don't know what's going to happen with next week, but it's going to be interesting because Tebow is, I hate to say it, but he did what everybody said he couldn't do. He threw for the yardage. He threw the touchdown passes. He didn't throw picks. He didn't have the interceptions, or he didn't have the fumbles. He actually played a good game, surprisingly enough.
He got half of that yardage on 3 pass plays.
Yeah.
An 80, a 40, and a 30. I think they'll hang with the Patriots for a little bit this week. I think it'll be like a replay of last time they played a few weeks ago. They actually, you know, Patriot defense is kind of soft. They scored. They matched scores for a while. And once Brady got cooking, they don't have the firepower to match him. And unless they can run McGahee and keep the Patriots off the field for a little bit. But I think in the end, I think Belichick will find a way to, put the stops on him like they did in the second half of the other game. And I think the Patriots will win. But I wouldn't be surprised if they hung with him for a while.
Yep, exactly. And we're going to get into a whole bunch of talk about next week's or this week's games and all of our picks in just a minute. Thanks for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on Ship to Shore Radio Network.
You're listening to Dreaded Sports Talk on the Dreaded Sports Talk Network. Network.
All right, we're back right here at Dreaded Sports Talk, and this is Evil Rob, and I'm with Ken from New Jersey, and we're about to get into this week's NFL matchups. Let's start off with the offensive-defensive matchup of the Saints against the 49ers. Ken, why don't you start this one off?
I think the Saints will find a way to score enough points on the 49er defense. I know they're on the road. I know their numbers are... Not quite half, but they're substantially down from what they do at home. I think they'll score on them enough, and I don't think the 49ers have the firepower to match them. And I just think Breeze will have enough offense in him between the running attack and the passing, and they'll find a way to win this game. I know San Francisco's been playing well. They're coached by well coached. We got Frank Gore. They can run. Their passing is enough to get them victories. They haven't put up huge numbers. Michael Crabtree's a decent receiver. Alex Smith is, like I said, he's done enough to win, but you don't put up the numbers that Breeze will put up.
Well, nobody puts those numbers up.
No. Except for maybe Rodgers, but.
Yeah. Well, I look at this as, Now, for some reason, I just am not sold on the Saints. I don't think that they are the quality of team that they really are. Yes, are they terrifying to play as a defensive coordinator? Without a doubt. But they're not unstoppable. I mean, they did lose the Rams. If they lose the Rams, anybody can beat you. Now, the Niners are a defensive-oriented team. They did not allow a rushing touchdown until week 14. They allowed one 100-yard rusher all season. So they can very easily, with their front four, shut down the Saints' running game. Very easily. And if you shut down the Saints' running game, you force Rodgers to pass. Or, I'm sorry, you force Breeze to pass. And if you do that, it's a double-edged sword. Because he can have a game like he did in the first half last week. He can have a game like he did in the second half last week. You never know what you're going to get. But the key to this game is going to be the road stadium. The Saints are used to playing in a dome. The Saints are used to playing in a speed, high-volume-oriented arena. And yes, I keep wanting to call it Candlestick, but it's not Candlestick. Sorry, that's nostalgia coming out on me. But anyway, the Saints' offense, I don't think that they're going to be able to have the speed needed to keep up with Breeze. I think you're going to see a lot of overthrown balls in this game. I think Breeze is going to be not outmatched by Alex Smith, because that's just impossible. There's no way Alex Smith can compete with Breeze on a one-on-one level. And if this game was in New Orleans, I'd be picking the Saints hands down. But because of the field conditions, because of everything that's going on with the Saints being on the road, they showed it last year when they went into Seattle. They're going to show up the same thing when they go into San Francisco this week, and I'm picking another upset. I could eat crow again, but I'm picking the Niners to upset the Saints.
You're going against the greatest quarterback of fantasy history?
Yes, I am. And I'm proud of it. And I assume that you're taking the greatest quarterback in fantasy history. All right, so we're split on this one. Ken's got the Saints. I got the 49ers. Now, let's move on to a game that you already started talking about, is Denver-New England. Now, I'm a big, big, huge proponent of always picking teams in the playoffs that lose a regular season matchup, a.k.a. what the Giants did in 2007, a.k.a. what the Packers did last year. You lose in the regular season, you come back in the playoffs, and you beat them because you got a bone to pick. Well, that's not going to happen this week. New England knows how to shut down Tim Tebow and the Denver offense. They proved it already once. They know what to do. They're not the same team that Pittsburgh is. They're not hurting like Pittsburgh. Tom Brady is not limp on one leg. They don't have their number one or number two safety out. They don't have a couple linemen out. Their star running back, you really can't call the law firm a star running back, but but still, their main running back is not out. New England should come in this game. They're at home. Denver's on the road. It's just going to be, I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I'm expecting New England to win by about 10, 12 points.
You know, I want to take the Patriots also. I just think they have too much firepower. I don't think Denver will be able to match them on the road. Tebow had a decent game in the first quarter. Then they found a way to shut him down. Plus, he's going to be without, statistically, his best receiver, Eric Decker. He's got a sprained MCL, so he's out. So now they can just watch the guy that caught Thomas, the guy that caught the touchdown, because they really have nobody else,
right,
as far as to throw to. You know what, McGahee is decent. He's had a pretty good year, but it's not.
They got Eddie Royal. Okay, like you said, they only got Thomas.
it's not enough to keep up with Welker and Gronkowski and Hernandez and even occasionally Deion Branch. Ocho Cinco will be twittering on the side, so he'll be busy.
Yeah, and even in that game, I think this was the game. I'm not positive. Please don't hold me to this, and correct me if I'm wrong. But Denver came in and basically shut down Wes Welker and shut down Gronkowski, and who went absolutely apeshit was Aaron Hernandez. Had something like 160 yards and 3 touchdown receptions. So it's a defensive battle, and what, in my mind, is going to be the biggest key to this game and the only way that New England can lose is Josh McDaniels. If he comes in and starts trying to screw around with things and try to do his thing instead of what has been happening all year and making the Patriots a successful team, the number one seed in the AFC, if he lets that play out, there should be no problems. If he tries tinkering with things, like he's known to do, then there could be a problem. I know they have a history. I know he was their offensive coordinator for quite a few years. But if he tries to tinker with things, it's going to change people's mindset on offense, and you don't know what's going to happen.
They need to stop the Broncos on the ground. The last game, Tebow had 93 yards and 2 touchdowns. McGahee had 7 carries for 70. Ball had 11 for 64. And Johnson had 1 for 25. So they had some decent ground yards. He threw for 194, no touchdowns, no picks. He did fumble twice. He lost one. He got one back. And they actually lost 2 other fumbles, 2 other players. They lost 3 fumbles in that game. That didn't help. It was 13-7 at the first quarter, and then the Pats got 20 points in the second quarter. to their field goal.
Yeah, so we both agree the Patriots are going to win this game. Hopefully it's going to be a good one and not an absolute blowout. Hopefully, I'm just hoping for Tim Tebow that he shows up for this game and doesn't just throw a goose egg and play like he did against Kansas City a couple weeks
ago.
Yeah. Because it will just turn everything all over the place, and we all know how the national sports media is with Tim Tebow. It's hit or miss. So if he show, I'm hoping the kid shows up, because not for nothing, I like the kid. I don't think he's the next coming of Christ, but at the same time, it's the media that's doing it, and that's what I like about it. He just sits there and shrugs his shoulders and thanks God and does whatever he does. And he's one of the few players that are in the huge spotlight of the NFL that doesn't bring it on to himself. And with that, I have to give the kid credit. But also with that, we're going to move on to another game, and that's Houston and Baltimore. What do you think about this one, Ken?
I'd like to see Houston win. I'd be rooting for them, but I think Baltimore will come out ahead in this game at home. I think this is where Yates have some problems with that defense. I think they'll cover Andre Johnson. I think it's going to come down to Yates not being able to put up the points. I would like to see them win, but I'm going to take Baltimore.
Well, this right here is pretty much the last hurrah for Andre Reed. And, I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. He's Lewis.
Ray Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, Ray Lewis. I can't believe I was drawing a blank on Ray Lewis's name. Wow. But this is they're pretty much their last hurrah. I don't see either of them playing again next year. They're both getting up in age. They've both been around for years. They've already both won a Super Bowl. And we won't get into that game either, because that's just a really sore subject with me. But I just think that with them coming into what could be their last game, and knowing it could be, whenever they lose, it could be their last, it's probably their last game together, if not individually for both of them. They're going to come out, and it's Baltimore's first home playoff game in the divisional series in years, if not ever. I'm not positive on that. But I just think that defense is going to be too tough for Yates to deal with. Yeah, you know, the only question is Arian Foster. If he can run the ball the way he did against Cincinnati, it will open up the passing game and let Yates fly a little bit. Because Andre Johnson is one of those receivers. He's one of the top five receivers in the league. You can double cover him and he'll still catch the ball. Plain and simple. He's a game-changing receiver, just like Arian Foster is a game-changing running back. And that's the only chance I see Houston having, and I just, for some reason, just as much as I like to see it, I can't see it happening, and I'm going to have to go with Baltimore on this one as well. Now, to my favorite game of the week. Or what could be my least favorite game of the week, either way. The New York Giants at the Green Bay Packers. Now, being that I am a diehard Giants fan, and everybody knows it, I have quite a bit to say about this game because, like I said before, I'm a big proponent of matchups where a team loses in the regular season. Well, this year, yes, on paper, the Giants lost, but it was also proven that the Giants won that game because of a missed touchdown call on the Giants early in the game. And that would have changed the whole complexity of everything. And who knows if they would have ended up winning after all. But the fact is, the Green Bay Packers won the game. And they won it in a fashion that was incredible, with the Giants scoring the game-winning touchdown, or the go-ahead touchdown, with less than a minute remaining in the game, and Aaron Rodgers driving down to about the 15-yard line and kicking a chip shot field goal. You know, Jordy Nelson had a couple amazing catches on that drive. Greg Jennings was right there. Donald Driver was right there. The only thing that I see hurting Green Bay right now is the fact that Greg Jennings is out. Other than
he's back this week.
Is he back this week?
He could have probably played last week, but they said everybody, you know, last week of the season. He was actually heard him on another radio show this afternoon. He's back.
That's not good. No, Ken, why did you have to tell me that, Ken? Come on, buddy. I thought we were friends here. But I do have to say that the Giants are a team, and everyone's calling them the team of destiny. They're like reliving 2007, and this is not the 2007 team. The Giants don't have what it takes. They're playing great football right now. The defense was incredible against Atlanta, but it was Atlanta on the road. To play that same way and the chances of them shutting out the Green Bay offense are slim to none. I don't care how much money you put up against me, I will not bet that the Giants will shut Green Bay out. And I will not bet that the Giants will win this game either, and I'm picking Green Bay because Aaron Rodgers is just on a mission. And I've said it before, I say it again. The Super Bowl runs through Green Bay, and there's a huge stop sign right there for all incoming teams that says, stop, turn around, and take your asses home because you ain't going past us. What's your take, Ken?
Yeah, everything you said was right on the nose. I'm going to be rooting for the Giants, but I just got this feeling that Rodgers is rested. Jennings is back. They've actually been getting a little bit of a running game out of Ryan Grant. Now, their defense isn't that good. And I can see, I think it's supposed to be cold up there, but I think it's supposed to be sunny. As long as the Giants have the advantage on the ground, so maybe they can control the ball a little bit, keep him off the field. But when the guy's on the field, like in that game they lost, the Giants just scored. They kicked the ball back, one pass, two pass, field goal range, you know? I got to go with Green Bay. I'll be rooting for the Giants.
So, to sum it up, we're split on the Saints 49ers, and we both agree that New England, Baltimore, and Green Bay will take it.
Yeah.
Whew, it's going to be an interesting week, because I was wrong on three of my four picks last week. The only pick I had right was the Giants. And I'm hoping I missed three out of four, and the Giants are the one I'm wrong on this week.
It's going to be a good game. There's a lot of good games. I mean, this weekend is all good games.
Well, this is the first time that I can remember that there wasn't that all the wild card teams lost in the wild card round. You don't have to worry about a wild card team winning the Super Bowl this year or some team that snuck in the playoffs. Well, other than the Giants. Because they kind of snuck in.
Denver kind of backed in, too. They lost three in a row and won because everybody else lost.
Yeah. But, you know, the hottest team going in is the New York Giants. And the coldest team going in is Denver Broncos. And Denver turned everything around, and the Giants kept going. We'll see what happens because, you know, they always say they play the games for a reason. And we'll figure out why they play the games between Saturday and Sunday, and next Tuesday should be another interesting debate on what's going to happen. But before we go, I do want to touch on the whole coaching fiasco of what's happening in the NFL right now. Now, I really can't call it a fiasco because it tends to happen every single year where between 7 and 10 coaches get fired. So far, the coaches that have been fired, or the teams that have fired coaches, I should say, are Miami, Jacksonville, Kansas City, Oakland, St. Louis, and Tampa Bay. Did I miss anybody?
No, because the Chargers, for whatever reason, kept North Turner.
Yeah,
I guess the Bears kept Lovie Smith. They like 8-8.
Yeah.
8-8 is a good number for them.
Yeah, well,
I don't understand that.
Yeah, me either. But we all the Raiders today fired Hugh Jackson.
I didn't see that coming. I mean, they were 8-8 their best running back that basically didn't play all year. When he did, they were, you know, were real tough in the beginning. I mean, 8-8, that was a big jump up for them. You know, I was kind of shocked. But I guess they have new ownership. There's some new general manager there. There's some stuff going on. So maybe he wanted to bring in his own guy.
Well, that,
Reggie
that,
McKenzie
that's...
took over as the GM. So at the, all, that's the only thing I can think of because I don't see the guy. You know, 1 year he had a team in a rebuilding mode, had no quarterback. They got Carson Palmer midseason. They still finished 8-8, and they fired him.
Right. You know, you have your star running back, you have an all-pro running back go down for the season. You have your quarterback go down for the season. Not many teams in the NFL can come back from that. Just look at the Bears.
Yeah.
They were a mess after they lost Forte and
Cutler.
Yeah, Forte and Cutler goes down, and they were a mess. And granted, they had a decent backup running back in Marion Barber. I say decent because we all know what happened with him with his little screw-ups a few weeks back. But he's still a decent running back. He was a starting running back in the NFL, and he still could be, but he just wasn't used to playing anymore. And he made a couple mistakes that were rookie mistakes, but at the same time, you know, he was almost in that whole rookie mode because he didn't play all year. The firing of Hugh Jackson because of a record or anything else is just blows my mind. And like you said, McKenzie came in, he fired Jackson, and it has to be because he just wants to bring his people in. And I just hope for the Oakland Raiders that they decide to keep a head coach for more than a year and a half because they've gone through three head coaches in 5 years. And I don't care who you are, how good you are, you can't, as a team, win like that when you're their players' minds must be spinning from different playbooks. They don't know what the play is. They don't know who to look for. They don't know what to call. They don't know anything because they're just going nuts on what's happening with their whole selections. Because every coach, it's no secret, every coach has his own playbook. And he brings an offensive coordinator in or a defensive coordinator in that has a similar playbook, and they talk and they do their things together. And they formulate what players are going to work not only for the season but for the year. And when you're talking about a team that goes through three head coaches in 5 years, come on. What you need some sort of consistency. Give a guy a couple years to come through. Really? Now, who do you see... Where do you see Jeff Fisher going to? He's already basically come out and said that he's going to Miami or St. Louis.
Yeah.
Which do you think is a better fit for him?
I'd probably go to Miami, but they said he's leaning towards St. Louis.
Yeah, see, I would think St. Louis is better just because of the quarterback situation. Sam Bradford is a franchise quarterback. Granted, he was hurt this year, but he still is a franchise quarterback. He's damn good behind that line. And that's what you need. You can't win. I mean, look at the teams that are in the postseason. You basically have franchise quarterbacks on 6 of the 8 teams that are left in the playoffs. The only two that really aren't franchise quarterbacks are Yates. I would consider Tim Tebow a franchise quarterback because I think this kid's going to be good. He's young, but he's still a franchise. But Yates and Alex Smith are pretty much the only two non-franchise quarterbacks that can be replaceable very easily.
It's a shame that Schaub got hurt. I think Houston would have made a good run if he was still there.
Oh, if Schaub was still in,
I think this guy's actually playing better than Leiner. Well, I mean, Leiner didn't last long, but he's just not a winner. They might have been better off in the long run with him going down, letting his kid play, because I just don't like Matt Leiner. He's just, I know he won in college, but as an NFL quarterback, he's just been awful wherever he's gone. And he's had very bad luck with injuries, too. Seems like he gets his opportunity to play, and he always seems to get hurt.
Yep. Well, that's his MO. Matt Leiner, I was never sold on. I did have my fantasy team 1 year, and that's because I needed a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
But, and he was starting in Arizona at the time, so, you know, I went with him. But he's never done anything in the NFL. He's been basically been a cancer to the team in the NFL. The only reason why Arizona did what they did was because of Kurt Warner.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
There's no way that team was getting the Super Bowl with Matt Leinart. And there's no way a team would Houston could have even won the division with Matt Leinart. I don't think it would have been possible. Yates was the best thing for that team at the time. And the only thing that scares me is if he goes down, it's between Jeff Garcia and Jake Delhomme.
Yeah.
And neither one is a good choice.
I think combined they're probably 80 years old.
That's it? I thought it would be over 100.
I mean, Jeff Garcia, hopefully it doesn't come down to him. He hasn't played. Actually, neither of them have played in a long time. If it comes down to that, then they're against Baltimore, then they can forget it.
Yeah, well, Delhomme did play three quarters 3 weeks ago. But he didn't do anything.
No, it's not like they were veterans that were on the bench the last couple of years and, you know, maybe saw some game action. I mean, Jeff Garcia, I can't think of the last time he played, probably 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Well, Garcia hasn't really started and played any serious minutes since he got cut from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that is a big, big deal. You can't just come off the bench when you're a starting quarterback and you start for as many years as Garcia did. You can't just all of a sudden come off the bench and play and expect to be what you were.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when it's been 3 or 4 years. And I don't know what's going to happen if Yates goes down, and that's just scary to say. If Yates goes down, they're in trouble.
Yeah. Then it's Whittle next year when Schaub is healthy again.
Yeah, if Schaub can stay healthy next year, Houston's going to be definitely a team to look out for. But one last thing before we get out of here. Do you see either Brad Childress or Marty Schottenheimer going anywhere this year? Do you see them picking up one of these teams that needs a coach?
Well, they said Schottenheimer was going to interview with, let me think now. I think it might have been Tampa. He was going someplace
Tampa
to interview. Childress, I haven't heard his name anywhere. So I don't think he'll be going anyplace unless there's a surprise all of a sudden. I haven't even heard his name in rumors or being placed anywhere. But Schottenheimer, because they were saying that the Jets may luck out, because if Schottenheimer gets the head job, he'll take his son with him, and they'll let the Jets off the hook, and they'll get themselves a new offensive coordinator.
Now, there's one other coach that just hasn't been brought up anywhere. I haven't heard his name, just like we haven't heard Childress's name. I haven't heard this guy's name either, and that's Bill Cowher. And every offseason you hear some rumor about Cowher going here, some rumor about Cowher going there. But this year it just hasn't been the same yet. What's the difference this year?
I think maybe he doesn't want to coach again. I know at one point he was mentioned he might want to go to Carolina. Apparently he's got some property or he used to live out there. There was a reason why he might have actually taken Carolina.
Well, that's where his family lives. His kids go to school just outside of Charlotte area, and they're growing up out there, and that's where his family is based out of, is the whole just outside the Charlotte area. So that's why he's always kind of wanted to go there. But I've also heard him as rumors every time Tom Coughlin's name gets thrown into the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always talk of him going to the Giants. And I'm wondering, is he just waiting for the positions to open up in Carolina or New York for him to throw his name in and say, hi, I'm back?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, because you're right. He's him and John Gruden, I haven't heard a lot about him either.
No. So there's a lot of experienced coaches that have not been mentioned. And there's a lot of names of coordinators that have never coached before that have been. And one name in particular, well, he's coached before, but Steve Spagnuolo. Now, there was talk about him possibly going back to the Giants before the Giants made the playoffs, before this whole last 2 weeks where the Giants' defense has just taken over. Now I find it very hard to believe that Spagnuolo will come back to the Giants as a defense coordinator. Is he going anywhere? Or
I don't
he's obviously going to go somewhere. But
they mentioned the Eagles.
Eagles, really? Wow. That would be bad.
Yeah. You know, when the Giants were going bad, he was mentioned about coming back here, but you know, they seem to have turned it around. If they come up with a good effort Sunday or win the game Sunday, then forget it. But that's, like you said, that's bad too, because you really don't want him going to the Eagles either. Because he may not have been a good head coach, and he really didn't have the best quality of players. You know, he was put in a situation where he wasn't going to win anyway. But if he goes to Philadelphia and turns that defense around, that would be awful, because then you have to live with that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And with that, Ken, why don't you give us your final thoughts of the evening?
You know what I was wondering? This isn't really a thought, or I don't know if you heard what happened. You must have seen it on the news. Because I'm just trying to find some information. After that Winter Classic with the Flyers and the Rangers, the Ranger fan, and I guess he was a Woodbridge policeman, they got jumped by these three thugs. And they actually had it on a surveillance camera. And for a while, it was 2 days, it was the big news story. And all of a sudden, it just like dropped off the face of the earth. I didn't hear anything. Did they ever find these people?
Well, they
I know. I saw an article. I was posting with somebody on Facebook, and SportingNews.com had an article that night. It said that the one kid, they were young kids, according to this article, they were boasting about it on Facebook, saying that, you know, we did it. And one of the guy's quotes was, "Didn't he look stupid laying there on the ground eating concrete?" And I'm thinking, he's not the one who looks stupid. You just put the evidence on Facebook, so 600 million people can see it. But I haven't heard anything about that.
Well, the last I heard about that was that the Philadelphia Police Department figured out that this guy not only put it on Facebook, but he posted the video with the not only his name but the names of all the other Flyers fans that were involved onto the Flyers official blog site. And by that, they found out who did it, and charges were pending at the time. But regardless, you know, we all know that fans get into fights after games. But at the same time, they picked the wrong guy. Not only was he a police officer, but he was a decorated Iraqi war vet.
Yeah, Purple Heart.
Yeah.
Someone I actually work with, she lives two houses down from this guy, and she said for like 3 days, the news trucks like camped out on her street.
Yeah, and I you're right. I haven't heard anything since then, and I really hope that they put these guys away, because that was just wrong. It was absolutely insane. It was after the game. It was at a cheesesteak stand.
Yeah, yeah.
Blocks from the stadium. The game was already over. Yeah, big deal. The Flyers lost. Okay, you jab back and forth, verbal jabs, but you know, it's just typical fan banter. And that just gives the city of schlubs, of brotherly schlubs, a bad name again.
Yeah, I mean, any place that has to have a like a makeshift court with a holding cell in its football stadium isn't good, you know?
No, exactly.
My brother was at he's a Dodger fan. He was at three, 4 years ago, Phillies Dodgers in the playoffs, and he's walking out, and some Philly guy starts giving him a hard time, so he starts going back at him, and then another Phillies fan starts yelling. Now, to show you how stupid these two guys were, the Philly fan who was originally starting yelling at my brother starts getting into it with the other Phillies fan, because he thought he was yelling at him. Now, my brother said both these idiots had Phillies jerseys on. This is a true story, because his wife was there. His wife grabbed, you know, him and got him out of there, because my brother's, you know, is could be a little bit of a hothead in any sports situations. She got him out of there before it's, you know, he got involved. But they actually got into a fight. They were both yelling at the same guy, my brother, wearing his Dodger stuff. One thought they were yelling at the other. They got into a fight.
Wow.
I just think it's crazy. You should be able to go anywhere in the country, any stadium, and wear your team's jersey. Like, I was down in Tampa wearing all my Twin stuff, and these people were as nice as apple pie down there. In fact, they even ask, oh, what part of Minnesota are you from? And, you know, I always say, oh, I'm from the southern part, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's one thing with sports that is just absolutely ridiculous. It's like, if you compare sports to politics, you know, it's sports, and I think they're very similar in the nature of the people. They're very dedicated to their teams, and they're very dedicated to their political affiliation. But you will never see fights, physical street fights, over between Republicans and Democrats. It just doesn't happen. And to see that happen in the sports world time and time and time again, you know, between what happened in San Francisco with the Dodgers fan, and what's happening now in Philadelphia with the Rangers fan, it's just absolutely ridiculous that people can get that crazy about a team. You know, don't get me wrong, I am a diehard fan of my team, but I would never think of getting into a fight because someone was wearing another jersey. I don't know if I'm just, you know, getting old, but even when I was 20 years old, I didn't think about getting into fights because someone wore another jersey. And it's been, you know, growing up in New Jersey, it's been a well-known thing. You don't, you know, I grew up as a Ranger fan. You don't go to Philadelphia with your Ranger jersey on because you will get your ass kicked. You shouldn't have to think like that. You should be able to wear whatever you want to wear, wherever you want to wear it, whether it's a Rangers jersey or a Flyers jersey or, you know, a Winnipeg Jets jersey. It doesn't really matter. But now you just can't do that anymore. And something needs to change. People need to wake the hell up, and the police need to, the authorities that be, need to step up and do something about this. Because I know they can't watch everything, and it's getting better in the stadiums, but when things like this happen, it needs to be taken care of right away, and prosecution needs to be to the fullest.
I mean, the NFL has tried to. They've changed the rules at games where you can't buy beer after halftime. I think they've even gone as far as opening up parking lot gates later, because you were getting people showing up at 9 o'clock either tapping the keg or just rolling out cases of beer, case after case. And by the time these people got into the game, they were trashed.
Yeah.
And I like having a beer, a couple beers at the game, you know. But I never got the point of paying a lot of money for a ticket to go to a football game, getting trashed out of your mind in a parking lot where you either fall asleep, get into a fight, you don't even remember the game. That you know, if you want to do that after the game, that's different. But why do that before the game? And then you just like waste the whole experience of the game, you know. You got to watch the Sports Center at night to see who won after you sobered up.
Yeah, I want to go spend $1,000 to forget my day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does make absolute sense. And you know, I've been the one to always tailgate before the games, and I've always managed to keep it calm enough to where I remembered the game and I enjoyed the game.
Yeah.
But I still had a good time. Well, as we're winding down here, I do have a final thought on one thing, and I just want to give my condolences to the entire Green Bay Packer family, especially Joe Philbin, who lost his son, Michael, just the last couple days. His body was recently recovered in the Fox River, somewhere in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And I always thought Oshkosh was like the thing my mother always used. I'm going to send you away to Oshkosh. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, okay, sure. And now I realize it's real. But, you know, to have this happen, it takes what we talk about every week on this show and what these players and these coaches go through every week getting ready for the games. it puts it into perspective. Because there are things that are so much more important in sports. And when you lose someone like your son, you know, I've never experienced it, and I hope I never do. And I hope nobody out there else out there ever does. But I've seen how it affects people. And it's just an amazing thing. And when this kid went missing, you saw everybody going crazy. The whole Green Bay area was just up in arms. You know, what could have happened? What could have happened? And it looks like the cops don't suspect foul play. And it looks like the kid, you know, just was unlucky enough to, you know, fall through the ice and drown in what was just a freak accident. But, you know, my heart goes out to the entire Packer family and Joe Philbin, you know, kudos. And to all the media out there, please. Give this guy a break. Give their family a break. This is not a media outlet. This is not a sports story. Give them time to grieve. You'll be able to see him on Sunday. Give him a few days to relax and enjoy his, you know, thoughts of his son and take it away. You know, even Stephen A. Smith came down to reality and said the same thing. So if he's saying it, come on, everybody listen to us, please. And with that, I think we've had another good night on Dreaded Sports Talk. What do you think, Ken? Did we have fun tonight?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's always fun.
It's always a good time, especially when Frank and Dred's away. It allows us to play.
Yeah.
But we'll be back next week at 9 o'clock to either eat crow or tell you how great we are on our picks this week and give you all of our information, everything that we have for the AFC and NFC Championship games. Plus, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more to talk about next week. So thank you so much for listening, and we shall see you next week.
So long, everybody.
Peace.
Good for the food.
Thank you for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk right here on Ship to Shore Radio Network. And now let's have a little song by Chris Ream called Raise My Glass to the Upper 48.
starts with the last chance and works its way down. Hopping and stomping on the island, town to town. Above us is madness, cars are honking, it's doggy dog. Here I'm chillaxing, always relaxing.
Just another day in paradise.
Just another day.
You know, friends and family, they call me. Why not visit back home? And although I love them dear, I just never want to live here. The roots have grown to this old rock, like me firm and strong. Rockers gone wild at blue heaven, where we all belong. I don't wanna go nowhere. That way I'll never be late. Island time is this life of mine. So I'll raise my glass to the other. Oh, yes, I'll raise my glass to the other. Raise my glass to the upper 40.
That's right. I hope everyone raises their glass to the upper 48, just like Chris Ream just did. And now we're going to take you to a little Jamaican time, but we're actually running on Jamaican time because that's what we all are doing right here on Ship to Shore Network. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to be played, what we're going to talk about, whether it's Ship to Shore, whether it's Dreaded Sports Talk. You never know what's going to happen because we're all running on Jamaican time. This is the Mr. Myers Band.
Punctuality, dysfunction. The boss said,
how do you run an errand for me?
I said,
of course I will.
I was feeling irate. I said, no problem, man. I'll take it there. I'll be leaving in a while. So I stopped at home to get some tunes for the cat. I found my cat was thirsty, the dog wanted out. There was so much to do, it slowed me down. I got a bit behind, and now I'm running, running, running on Jamaican time. Running, running, running on Jamaican time. Now come on, come on, come on. No need to hurry now. Cause I'm running, running, running on Jamaican time. It's going to be fun. Whoa. Why you always run behind? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Got a slow clock in my mind. Punctuality, dysfunction. Punctuality, dysfunction. So I left my house at 2:03. I put on Easy Skank and Fine by my leg. Easy Skank, wa la 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 la. Easy Skank, take it easy. Lord, now take it easy.
Oh no!
Well, I don't know what I'm gonna do, cause I should've
been there at the corner to two. I gotta get there quick, the traffic's thick. I'll never make it now. And now I'm running, running, running on Jamaican time. Running, running, running on Jamaican time. I said, now come on, come on, come on. No need to hurry now. Cause I'm running, running, running on Jamaican time. It's going to be fine. Whoa. Why you always run behind? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Got a slow clock in my mind. I got the punctuality dysfunction. Punctuality dysfunction. When I got there from the at 2:40, there was a note that said,
call your boss immediately.
And I dialed the phone, I sent to myself, here we go again. He told me there must be some sort of explanation for giving me all of this aggravation. Tell me your situation. You better not be a fabrication.
Oh no, sir.
And now I'm running, running, running on Jamaican time. Running, running, running on Jamaican time. I said, now come on, come on, come on. No need to hurry now. Cause I'm running, running, running on Jamaican time. It's going to be fine. Whoa. Why you always run behind? Whoa, 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 whoa. Got a slow clock in my mind. I got this. Punctuality dysfunction. Punctuality dysfunction.
That's right, we are running on Jamaica time, and just like anybody else wants to do. Oh, this is Dreaded Sports Talk, the conclusion of the couple hours that we have together every week. And I want to leave you with a song by John Friday, who John is one of the very special guests that we have on our show every once in a while here at Dreaded Sports Talk. He's one of the most colorful people that you could ever bring on. And for some odd reason, he always seems to pick the games better than the rest of the panel. I don't understand it why, but because we know what the hell we're talking about. And obviously, he knows more. But, but the man also knows how to play music. And one thing that he knows how to do is to tropicalize people. And that's the song I'm going to leave you with. A little song by John Friday called Tropicalize. We'll see you all next week. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to Dreaded Sports Talk.
I'm sitting here drinking a beer in a tiki bar. Really don't think I'm gonna get too far today. Sun is dancing all across the bay right now, and I ain't getting off this bar stool before the sun goes down. It took a while to get here, but not long for me to know gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as I can go. Gotta take life easy, 'cause it's too short to take it hard. I realize I've been tropicalized. Whoa, I realize I've been tropicalized. There's a lady in the corner sitting all alone, and the band's playing music that is sweet and slow. I'm gonna buy her a drink, I'm gonna ask her to dance. I'm feeling too good not to take this chance. It took a while to get here, but not long for me to know. I'm gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as I can go. Gonna take life easy, 'cause it's too short to take it hard. I realize I've been tropicalized. Whoa, I realize I've been tropicalized. I think it's time to be a beach bum. I think it's time to have some fun. Just pour yourself a cup of spiced rum and hang out in that tropic sun. Just listen while those steel drums play. It's a barefoot party every day. Then I toast the sunset with my island girl. I'm never going back to the real world. It takes a while to get here, but not long before you know. You're gonna ride those salty breezes just as far as you can go. You gotta take life easy, 'cause it's too short to take it hard. When you realize you've been tropicalized. Whoa, when you realize you've been tropicalized. Whoa, whoa, when you realize you've been tropicalized.